Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hello listeners, sorry to interrupt your show, but we've got a small favour to ask. We're currently doing a bit of a survey to find out more about you, your podcast listening habits, and the sort of adverts that are most relevant to you. If you feel like helping, please head to surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. That's pretty catchy, so I'll say it one more time. surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. Thank you.
Welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, the Dons ditch Derek, a ding-dong at Dingwall, and oh yeah, Rangers are champions. I'm Andrew Slavin, and alongside me on the podcast, true champion lineup, first senior producer at Motherwell, Laura Brannan, and senior advisor on all things tactical, JJ Bull from The Telegraph. How are we both?
Hello,
yeah.
I'm JJ, and the girl's Laura, so you don't know.
In case you were wondering who I was.
Yes, there you go. Before we talk about some big things that happened at the weekend, a few thoughts on the fact that League 1 and 2 will be returning. They kick off again on the 20th of March. Happy?
Definitely. Bring back all the football. The more the merrier. It's great. I think these teams have kind of, the fans have suffered a wee bit recently. They're watching fans of other clubs have a solace from this COVID nonsense and have an escape on a Saturday, and they've kind of been suffering not having that. So I think it's good to kind of get this back rolling again. There's no reason why not. They're getting tested, and if they follow the same rules as everyone else, there's no reason why Leagues 1 and 2 shouldn't be treated the same. And I'm really pleased that these fans are kind of getting back to some sort of normality in that aspect. Right. So looking forward to it.
We should say that your cat has been replaced by a lawnmower, Laura.
Yeah.
Not like for like, but yes. The noise in the background is the Motherwell groundsman cutting the grass. So no meowing this week. She's at home.
They can get like a bracket like featuring Motherwell groundsman on the podcast this week. You know, like when you get a rapper in the middle of a pop song.
Yeah. Feet. Yeah. Look, some of these teams have only played 8 games of a planned 27 games. Is there any doubt that they're going to try and play all those 27? Because there's talk that they will try and reduce it to about 18. Do you think that's about right, JJ?
I mean, I don't know. It's an awful lot of games. Some of them are going to be awful. I'll be so tired. Like the end of five-a-side, 10 minutes to go, and you just start trying to do silly things. Like pretending to dive and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know, because I'm not part of the committee that's chosen it, so I can't give you an answer for that. But you'd think they'd want to try and... I mean, it makes sense to me that they had fewer games, just purely for a recovery between it, because then they've had that long off as well. It's going to take ages to get back into the swing of things. And then
yeah, they've had
alone.
10 weeks off, haven't they? Yeah. I mean, you'd think normally really with 10 long. Weeks, and they've only really got 3 weeks to kind of get back into it again. I know obviously they've been doing work at home separately, but to come back into it and work as a team, they're going through another pre-season, essentially. So it's a lot, but then they're... So the teams are wanting 22 games as opposed to 18, which is what the league are wanting. Just to kind of give that, I think everyone knows 27 is not possible. But the 18 they're arguing is too short because that only gives them a few, like maybe a handful of games to get back into it. It's not great for teams that are going for playoff positions and such like. Whereas the 22, they're proposing a split. They're creating a split similar to the Premiership, and they're wanting to kind of add that little competitive edge to it, and just kind of get a couple more games in. There's a lot of logistics there. I can see arguments for and against it. I think the main argument from the SPFL is if there's any problems, like COVID issues arise and games have to be called off, there isn't really any time to fit in any more fixtures because it is going to be just constant. It's going to be midweek, weekend, on repeat. Constantly, and also the Scottish Cup's coming back as well now, so it's a lot to cram in before the date has to finish in June because of the Euros. So,
well, there is one way they could do it. They could just have every game, like they could do like when you have a summer tournament and you play like three games in a row. So like you play the first game against one team and then you only 45 minutes a game. That would, you know, just change it up.
Yeah, why not?
Strange
put it
times.
In a cage. Just go wild.
Yeah, like the Nike advert. Yeah, go for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Well, later on, Finn Marks is going to join us to sing Stevie G's praises. But first up, a Don who's gone.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
6 goals in 8 appearances before today. Adam Rooney with a chance to win the cup for Aberdeen. And he does! And he does! The almost 2 decades of pain, hurt and at times ridicule at the hands of others is over for Aberdeen Football Club. Derry McInnes has guided them to silverware within a year of taking the job.
Do you know what's especially good about that clip, right? So you get this very, very occasionally in football games. If you listen to the actual pitch of the crowd noise when that goal goes in, you can hear the kind of release. It's different to like a big goal at the end of a 2-0, you know, a 2-1 win in the last minute or something like that. There's just something slightly higher to it. The same way as something like that Aguero goal. I remember just the noise being slightly higher. I remember Robbie Fowler scored like a last-minute winner in the 4-3 against Newcastle once in the English Premier League. And that was just like slightly higher. And that there, I mean, I was in the crowd there, but it's almost like men rather than being like, yeah, they're screaming.
Brilliant.
It's slightly higher, yeah.
Happier times, of course, for Derek McInnes, who Aberdeen announced on Monday night had agreed to leave Pittodrie after 8 years as manager. And McInnes won Aberdeen's first silverware in 19 years with the League Cup in 2014. He also produced 4 second place finishes. I think I kind of just need to throw it to you, JJ, because you've followed Aberdeen, you've interviewed Derek McInnes recently. It was kind of always assumed that he would leave on his own terms, but are you surprised? What's your immediate reaction to it?
Yeah, I'm genuinely surprised that it happened now. Even though the football is awful, truly, truly terrible. The run of form is very poor. Weirdly, I mean, the last game he's in charge of, Aberdeen should have beaten Hamilton pretty comfortably, but strikers didn't take chances that were created. One of the first games they've actually created chances for a long time. But I think this has been coming for a little while, and I think the general consensus is that he would probably have one of those mutual terminations where it's not really mutual, but it just suits everyone to have gone in the summer anyway and get someone else in that plays a different style of football. Like, you've had this new training ground open. You've got a very ambitious chairman, Dave Cormack, who wants to be able to do big things. I think a lot of fans thought this was going to happen in the summer. And to do it now, they're on a lot of money, apparently, Doherty and McInnes. So to have done it now, especially with the amount of how difficult things are financially, I think mutual termination seems like both parties have come to some sort of agreement and have agreed to go. But I mean, I was looking through, like, McInnes will go down as one of probably the best managers in Aberdeen's history. When he took them on, they were really mid-table. He replaced Craig Brown and won Aberdeen's first trophy in, was it 20 years, I think it was? 19 years, yeah, in the 13-14 Scottish League Cup. And that was a massive thing. But more than just the League Cup win, honestly, I think he changed the way the city feels about the club again. I remember, like, because I've lived out of Aberdeen for a while now, but I remember growing up, I didn't see that many Aberdeen tops going around, honestly. But when McInnes came in, there was a certain pride people felt in the club. the standards seem to get higher. People could, because people identify with their club and it kind of symbolises a lot of what people are. You know, and I think it just, there was just better that you knew they could compete, maybe not win, but they knew they could compete. And suddenly you started seeing kids wearing the Aberdeen tops. And this came at the same time as everything just seemed to get more professional, and the way the club conducted itself in even things like social media and everything that was done for the fans, just everything was better. But I think the worry was maybe that he spent a bit too long there. And even though, I mean, a team maybe needs to be refreshed every 3 seasons or so. He's had to do it every single season and has done it for about 8 years. So it's not been ideal. Whenever he's built a good team, it's been disassembled. I mean, you look at the 2016-17 team, it's probably his best one. And the best players in that team, he had Graham Shinney, Shay Logan at his prime, he's not there anymore. Kenny McLean, who's now a proper, he's, you know, Premier League level player. Ryan Christie. Adam Rooney at his very best, Niall McGinn at his very best, Johnny Hayes at his very best, and Ryan Jack, who's probably been one of the best players in the league this season. And replacing those players again and again has been a massive, massive task, and I think few managers could have done it as well as he has. But when you look at how the team has performed since then, it has been a steady decline. Like in 2016-17, I look at underlying and normal numbers, the XG was 73.6, actual goals was 74. And their XG against was 42 versus an actual 35. So slight overperformance in what they let in and around about what they should do. That's a massive amount of goals, you know. 74 goals to score in one season in 16-17, finished second. But that has dipped every year since. So there's 56 goals in 17-18 that they scored. And this is when Rangers started to really threaten, you know, and started to get good. And possession share is around about 52%. So it's not really a possession-based team, nor is it a counter-attack one. It's somewhere in the middle. 2018-19, 57 goals. So, I mean, I say it's a decline, but it's round about the same. It's just not great compared to the 74 of the high, but that was after rebuilding. And then you've got 2019-20 is where things start to go wrong. And sure enough, the season finished early because of this coronavirus thing. You may have heard of this in the news. But they had a severe underperformance, where they scored 40 goals versus an XG of 33. So it's actually an overperformance. What I mean is that the team is performing better than it should have done and it still wasn't doing that well. So there were other teams who were, I mean, I think they were fortunate to even finish as high as they did. And this season it has been dreadful. They cannot score, but they cannot create chances. The system clearly does not work. They play the same number of long balls as Ross County, but have the third highest possession, which doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense, that you can hit the ball long so often and keep more of the ball. It's like they don't even need a midfield. And that sort of ties into things like Aberdeen have played the third fewest through balls this season. I don't know if that means much to anyone, but it just implies that like everything is all from crosses. And they haven't really had strikers all season who can score from crosses. Now they do, but they're limiting all their crosses to players like Johnny Hayes. I think he has the most assists of the season. He's like 3. But he's passed his best. And someone said, I think it was on Twitter, someone proposed a theory to me that McInnes' best years coincided directly with when Niall McGinn and Johnny Hayes were best at crossing the ball.
Really?
Yeah, and I think that's funny. Just about right.
I was going to say, JJ, I mean, with regards to legacy and when people look back on McInnes and his time at Aberdeen, it will, for the most part, be looked back on fondly. You know, if you think in 10 years' time, people will look back and go, "Whoa, McInnes was a great manager." And he showed great loyalty to the club as well, particularly when his stock was so high, he turned down the likes of Sunderland, and he famously turned down Rangers in 2017. And now it just kind of, it begs the question, who can come in and replace McInnes and make an even bigger impact that he maybe made when he first came in? We know that Paul Sheeran will take charge on an interim basis. He's supported by the likes of Barry Robson and Neil Simpson. But it is, to me, JJ, the standout name is there for all to see, Stephen Robinson, who left Motherwell earlier in this season.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, on a couple of things you just said there, I think even the people who have wanted McInnes out for about 2-3 seasons, even, I mean, they're not all daft, you know. They know that what McInnes did, and they will fully respect him for it. There's a small percentage of people who don't seem to even understand that bit. But the person that comes in, McInnes's great strength was nothing to do with the way the team played, nothing tactical. It was purely standard set and man management and getting the most out of a certain group of players and identifying the kind of characters. And this is one of the reasons that the team has been so fun to follow for the last few seasons, is the characters have been there and the team's had a bit of, now not a playing identity. I mean, now it's just hoof the ball and chase it. But it's been players who win and putting in that winning mentality and that determined mentality, even though it's hit a ceiling. I think in terms of who comes in next, it's got to be someone who has that same ability to identify winning characters, because that's basically been what's kept Aberdeen so high up, is having players like future captains, basically, like Shinny, McLean, even getting McKenna brought through, he's the kind of player that you needed to have. And you had Mark Reynolds, Mikey Devlin came in and was good for a while. You know, these sorts of players, not all of them have hit, and not all those transfers have been great. I mean, a good few of them haven't worked, but it's difficult in the market that they work in, and the scouting network's very small. I think whoever comes in, so that's one of my points, whoever comes in, I think they should just totally reboot how the scouting's done. They've got big ties with Atlanta, so there's surely scope to be able to do that and identify players in different leagues who are mixed in with these future captains that you buy in to take the club to another level. You've got to identify those kind of players, so there's got to be good man management. I think someone who can vary tactically and adapt to opposition how different teams play. I really like Stephen Robinson, and I think he'd be great. My one concern with Robinson is how he took Motherwell to third season before, and they played lovely football, and then this season that same sort of football did not work, and it took so long for them to come back. It'd be various reasons for it, but you look at what's happened to Motherwell, and they should be fine this season, but that's, you can maybe worry about that. And after a dynasty like what McInnes has put in at Aberdeen, you look at Wenger and Ferguson down in England, when one of those managers goes away, it can often fall apart very quickly because everything's built in their image. So I was looking at managers I'd actually want to get in. Stephen Robinson's on a short list. Jim Goodwin would be who I think would be great, just based on what he's done at St Mirren and the way they play, the way they've adapted, and the limited players he's had and the recruitment he's done. But I want someone who's young and hungry and ambitious. Aberdeen, for players, players who go to Aberdeen should use it almost as a stepping stone to bigger things. And I think you have to accept that. Aberdeen cannot challenge Rangers and Celtic. They can maybe push them. Some people say that they should be pushing for second. No way. Rangers and Celtic should have that sewn up. But they should at least be demonstrating that they can play and give you a bit of pride in how they do it. And finish well in the Cups. But Cup football's different to league football. Anyway, so someone young who is looking for a bigger job, and I'm talking about people like Darren Fletcher doing their coaching badges, trying to get to the highest pro level, someone like that who's played at a very high level, knows the kind of standards that like Steven Gerrard is putting at Rangers, that's what you're looking for. It doesn't matter if they haven't necessarily managed before, I think that they've got some experience at youth reserve level, like Gerrard had, that should even be enough. And Darren Fletcher applies to that. I think Sean Maloney, if he were interested in going into management, would be an excellent choice. But even I was looking at Danny Cowley. So the Cowley brothers, people who aren't familiar with them, they managed in lower leagues in England. They're really young, didn't really play at a high level, but they've come through and taken every team they've taken to quite high. I think their last job didn't go so well. You used to know more
Huddersfield,
about that.
They were at Huddersfield, and to be honest, a lot of Huddersfield fans were quite surprised when they were given the boot. They thought they'd actually done a really good job. I really like that shout, to be honest. I know the Cowleys quite well. I followed their rise from when they were at Concord Rangers in like the eighth tier of English football, and then they went to Braintree in the National League, took them to levels that you would never imagine. That's like taking Hamilton to second. That's the kind of job that they did with Braintree. That's a really interesting one, and he always works with his brother, Danny.
Yeah. The reason I think that someone like that might be interested is that the Scottish Premiership is such a window just now with what Gerrard's done. Everyone's looking at it. If you go in and do a good job there, there's a real opportunity for a manager to do something. The ones who are currently like favourite, people like Stephen Glass, that link is purely because he's at Atlanta, which is obviously tied to Aberdeen, and because he used to play for the club. I've no idea if he's a good coach or not. I don't know, and I don't think that's enough. Paul Lambert's been linked. Gordon Strachan, never happening. It's just not going to happen.
I was just going to give a kind of perspective of a non-Aberdeen looking at McInnes. I think it's a really good point that JJ made right at the start, was that how much McInnes changed Aberdeen when he first went in because of the position they were in at the time. When I first got into football 20-odd years ago, Aberdeen were struggling at the bottom of the table. It was around the time Ebb Scofdale was there, and they didn't get relegated because, was it the time they brought in the 12 teams? They brought St Mirren and Dunfermline up to the top flight.
And there was that thing with Falkirk in the small stadium.
So there's been reasons why Aberdeen have escaped relegation in the past. So growing up for me, Aberdeen were always a struggling team. They were never the side that they are now. So I think that's interesting, because I think it's easy for even myself, who has grown up with that, to think of Aberdeen as this big club, this big team that have been involved up the top end, around the European spot, fighting for kind of second place. So you've got to remember McInnes did that, and I think that's really important. On the flip side of that, though, and this is where I've always kind of had the issue with, why does he not challenge more? And I know it's an age-long argument I've had with JJ over the finances and everything. But one thing I'll remember as an outsider is he only brought one piece of silverware to the club in his entire time. And that was right at the start of his tenure at Aberdeen. So what has happened in the last 7-odd years? Why no real challenge when, like, the likes of Rangers been out of the league? Why no real challenge in the cups? Okay, I say challenge, that's harsh, considering they got to cup finals. But to only come back with one piece of silverware, I think will be disappointing. I think, from the outside looking in, I would think, well, if I was a supporter of that club, I would be quite disappointed with that. I feel like sometimes they've kind of slipwalked to the European spot. JJ did touch that, kind of got lucky sometimes. The flip side, unlucky to miss out sometimes as well. I think back to the time when Motherwell scored in the last minute. Was it 2014 up at Pittodrie to miss out on the Champions League spot?
When they fouled
the
keeper. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, you're better.
that was a moment to remember that one well.
So I think there are definitely, you've got to remember what McInnes did to turn things around, but I don't think he is the all-round perfect manager who has achieved all sorts at Aberdeen. I think there's still reasons to be kind of critical of that sense. I think even like the going into every Celtic game knowing that the Celtic were going to win, it became a kind of joke towards the end, that they didn't really kind of turn up sometimes on the bigger days, the bigger challenges. So there's definitely flip sides to that. I think personally he stayed maybe a season too long, and that's maybe affected his reputation in the long term, because of what you're seeing with performances this season and tactics have just been a bit lackluster and disappointing. But overall, definitely a success for the club. Definitely.
I believe that is a very good summary. Let's move on. Laura smashed it. Let's go.
To finish off, amazingly, what has happened, Pye and Bovril have brought our attention to it. The longest serving manager in the Premiership now is Steven Gerrard. So let's find out how his weekend went.
Pip, what do you think of the risks of players taking part in fantasy football?
I think that... fantasy football? What is this fantasy football?
And Man City win the treble again with an incredible goal for Erling Haaland, who's just signed a 10-year contract with Man City. He said what sealed it was the long flowing locks of manager Pep Guardiola. Look at him there on the sidelines, his hair cascading down over his shoulders.
Next question.
That's one sort of fantasy football, Pep. Paddy Power.
18+ BGAMMONAWARE.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
And that is that at Tannadice. But it's not about Dundee United and Celtic now. It's about Rangers. The day has come. The day is here. The wait is over. Rangers are champions of Scotland.
Let's move on now to the crowning of Rangers as champions of Scotland for the first time in a decade. Steven Gerrard's side won 3-0 against St Mirren on Saturday to all but mathematically confirm the title. Their 55th championship became official after Celtic's goalless draw at Dundee United on Sunday. So we're joined now by friend of the show and Rangers fan, a man who was popping bottles on Sunday It's Finn Marks.
Hello.
Are you feeling better than Alan McGregor was the other day?
Probably just slightly better than Alan McGregor, yeah. I'm feeling good, just very tired. I don't think I've really slept at all since Saturday, but yeah, not feeling good.
Good for you. I mean, this is Steven Gerrard always going to be remembered for the man who stopped 10 in a row. And they've stuck by him when things weren't always great.
Yeah, I mean, do you know, honestly, it was never really about stopping Celtic's 10 in a row. I think that's just a kind of happy byproduct for many Rangers fans about winning the league this season. But I think for Rangers fans, it's more the fact that winning the title, like this first league title back in the top flight, for many Rangers fans and myself included, it kind of signifies this end point to a journey that started, you know, with the ball in the hedge at Brechin in 2012. And I think just, you know, on Gerrard, even though it hasn't always been plain sailing, I think right from the outset, you could see that there was a plan, you know, a system and a style of play that he wanted his team to play, coupled with that drive and determination that served him so well as a player. It was a long-term plan. You know, the board were committed to giving him the 3 to 4 years he felt it would take. So they deserve a lot of credit for that too. You know, patience isn't something you often see either side of the old firm. But I, on a personal level, for me as well, there's a real delight in the personal stories that Rangers winning the title delivers too. You know, you look at someone like Connor Goldson, who lost almost 18 months of his career to a heart defect whilst he was at Brighton, didn't know how much of a career he'd ever safely get back to. And he's now become the quickest player ever to reach 150 appearances for Rangers. And he's been the rock that the defence has been built around. You look at Jermaine Defoe, had a very distinguished career. He said that he came to Rangers to win a title. And now at the ripe old age of 38, he's achieved that for the first time in his career. And James Tavernier, who has literally been through it all with Rangers in the last 6 years, including, you know, various pastings from Celtic, cup final defeats, literally being labelled a serial loser in the press. And now he's had the season of his life, and he'll lift the championship trophy in a few weeks.
We've just come off the back of speaking about Derek McInnes leaving Aberdeen, but when he came in, he brought a respectability back to the club. Steven Gerrard is undeniably a man who's done that with Rangers, bringing them straight to the top, not just in domestic terms, but in Europe as well.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, you know, whenever Gerrard goes, I think that's what the Rangers fans will remember most, was the style of play that he's brought. I think he's brought a lot of pride back for Rangers fans in the club, not just for the domestic success in delivering a title, but you're absolutely right. Thinking back, even under someone like Walter Smith, I don't think Rangers fans could ever say they were ever confident of going into a European match, and that's despite getting to, you know, a European final. But now watching Gerrard teams in Europe, you kind of expect Rangers to do something, and it's kind of put not just Rangers, but Scottish football back on the map a little bit. Because I think that's the litmus test, right? You know, for a successful team is how they compete in the bigger competitions. And I think Rangers can be quite proud of their achievements in Europe under Gerrard.
Finn, talk to me about the fans that gathered at Ibrox and again at the training ground the following day. I think there's a lot of kind of arguments on both sides for this, but firstly, how did you feel watching that and not being in that, in terms of just in general, in normal times? Would you have liked to have been part of those celebrations? And then also, what did you think in terms of it breaking lockdown rules and all such like?
Yeah, it's not great, is it? I think it was a really peculiar kind of 24 hours for it. To be honest, I was actually quite taken aback, I think, by the level of political grandstanding that certain sectors took in using those crowds. But that's not really an issue to get into here. So I think, you know, whilst it isn't right, of course it isn't. I think as football fans, you can kind of sympathise with that explosion of joy and celebration that comes with a significant victory. We all felt it when Scotland, you know, managed to get past Serbia to qualify for the Euros. We saw it a few weeks ago with the St. Johnstone fans doing a similar kind of thing after their team won the League Cup. And I'm not for one moment saying that it condones the behaviour of Rangers fans, because St. Johnstone fans did it, or Liverpool fans did it last season, or, you know, Celtic fans have protested at various points in the season. No one should be out in mass crowds. And that's kind of really all there is to that. I think, yeah, you're saying, like, would you want to be in there? Of course you would. Like, you want to be around other people that are celebrating too. Like, that's the joy of it. And that's why it's been so hard watching, you know, things like Scotland qualifying for the Euros and not being able to be around other fans, like watching it on Zoom or FaceTiming people or whatever. It doesn't temper the joy, though. It's still something really fun to celebrate. Just in terms of the scenes that we saw, there's no way that you can possibly really condone it. Yeah.
See, even regardless of when you take away the COVID argument of it, and whether you agree it's right or wrong or not, you can't deny that some of the shots were amazing to see, the smoke bombs and the pyro and some of the photographs from it. It's made me really miss supporters even more so than I did before. I just think some of the scenes, it's so unfortunate it's come surrounded with such a negativity around it, because in normal times, I think you'd really appreciate just the spectacle of the whole thing.
I think so, and it's just. I mean, Rangers fans aren't unique in that. Like you're saying, it's all fans. You know, I think we've just passed the 1 year anniversary, haven't we? Of, you know, supporters being allowed into grounds in Scotland, and we're all just desperate to get back to that normality and that atmosphere. And I think you saw it as well. It's not just from the fan side, but it's from the players as well. I think, you know, at the end of the St Mirren game, they all kind of ran into the corner to the fence where the fans were outside. I think there's something difficult even from the playing side to hold back from those kind of celebrations because of how much has gone in to this season from the playing side as well.
It's like being in prison after to talk through the plexiglass or something. Yeah. You get one phone call. Oh, come on, you lads! That was it.
Not great to see, but great to see. It's a really, really odd one. It's just hard. It's really, really hard. But let's focus again on Gerrard, because there's plenty of media that are going to be talking about how long he's going to be staying at Rangers after the job he's done there. What do you think? Because obviously we've just seen that Joachim Löw is going to be leaving Germany in the summer. Then the rumours will go from Klopp going to Germany. Then the rumours will come Gerrard going to Liverpool.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Rangers fans are under any illusion that Gerrard will be at Rangers forever. Personally, I don't know if he will leave in the summer, even if the Liverpool job does come up, which again is a lot of ifs, ands or buts, because I'm not too sure Klopp feels like he's quite done there as well, regardless of how disappointing a season it's been for Liverpool. But there was something quite interesting Gerrard said in his post-match after the St Mirren game on Saturday, where he said that he's got a feeling that he wants more. And, you know, next season, he's still got a couple of years in his contract, first and foremost. But next season, you know, he gets the chance to have a go at the Champions League with this team that he's assembled. He's got the chance to potentially win more silverware, because I don't know if Celtic will be able to bounce back straight away from the job that's there. So I think they're in a really good position going forward now. It's not just about winning the title this season, but it's about the bigger picture going forward. And I think Gerrard, he's kind of earned the right to be able to go through the next couple of years, I think. And for as long as he wants to be there, I think he'll stay at Rangers. And I think that could be for another couple of seasons.
Shouldn't forget as well that there's still loads to play for before the season finishes as well. Still unbeaten. Could still also reach the same points tally that or points record that Celtic did in 2016-17. And still Europe to play for.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much still to play for, and it'll be interesting to see how the Rangers squad kind of cope with that, because I think we saw, you know, we were making a joke about Alan McGregor and the way that he looked slightly worse for wear the other day. It'll be interesting to see how they get on Thursday. But I think because the pressure of the league titles now off, they can confidently go into these games as, you know, champions. And I don't see that there's any reason to fear. You know, the games against Slavia Prague or what comes after that. There's obviously, you know, the news that the Scottish Cup is coming back, so there's still trophies to play for and still their pride and those records to chase in the league. So yeah, there's a lot still to do. And I think just from the way that you've seen how relentlessly Rangers have gone about the pursuit of the title this season, I don't think the coaching staff and Gerrard will allow the playing squad to kind of take their foot off the pedal.
You can hear Finn and many more on a special Beyond the Headline podcast from The Athletic about this Rangers title triumph. That's coming out in the next week or so, I think. But let's stay with Rangers, guys. I mean, it's not just how good they are up front. They are smashing defensive records as well. I mean, nine goals conceded this season is just ridiculous, JJ. It's unreal. And we've heard from Finn how Connor Goldson's been at the bedrock of that. He's played every game.
Yeah, there's a really good article in The Athletic, actually, Jordan Campbell wrote, which if you're interested in how Steven Gerrard's done it, and, well, I say how Michael Beale has had a huge input in the tactical setup of the team. Like, Gerrard's gone in and told Beale how he wants the team to look, and Beale has gone about making it look like that on the training ground. He takes charge of most of the training, and Gerrard kind of sets the standards. They've done everything very, very well to such a high standard. It's really impressive from the entire coaching staff. Just totally deserved. Maybe Goldson for Player of the Year. I don't know. I think Ryan Jack's one of the most important players. I think he's been absolutely brilliant under Gerrard.
I just think because Goldson has played every game, it's just amazing and a great story, like Finn said. Laura, what do you think?
I heard a stat the other day where they were saying that Rangers haven't conceded a single goal this season through a defensive error. I think that is incredible to get to this stage of the season. And no defender, or anyone for that matter, has put a foot wrong to such an extent that it has led to a goal. That is some achievement. So in terms of defensively, they've done amazingly. I mean, you look at, we were talking about Tavernier and how outstanding he was before his injury, saying how could he possibly not win Player of the Year? He's so far in front, and then for him to, and I don't even know if we'd still be having this conversation if he was out injured or not, but for then to have other players around him, like you're talking about Goldson, to then come up and also be in contention for that place, it just shows just how incredible they are throughout their starting 11 or their squad in general. They are so strong, and to have that depth as well, they've had players even like, I mean, off the top of my head, Arfield, who was getting written off as past it at a certain stage, saying, right, he's kind of winding down his career at this time. And okay, he's not started every game, and he's been quite often coming off the bench. He has still made an outstanding input despite that, despite not being a 90-minute player regularly. Fantastic throughout the entire squad they've been, and even up front as well. So they scored 77 league goals this season, which is more than any other team in the world. I don't think that's something to be scoffed at. That's insane. That's something that us as Scottish football in general should be shouting about. That if we are standing out in terms of other clubs around the entire world, shout about that, because that is a fantastic achievement for them.
It's amazing. It's we should also make a, because obviously they played St Mirren, but a wee mention for St Mirren's Dylan Reid, who came off the bench and he became the club's youngest ever player at 16 years old and 5 days. He was only 15 a fortnight ago. It's that's absolutely mental. Class.
That's them getting Rwenge for the Scottish League Cup semi as well.
I think
because that could be what stops them getting the triple or quadruple if they were to win the Europa League as well.
Obviously, in terms of Celtic, they could have delayed the title party if they had won on Sunday. It was 0-0 between them and Dundee United. And it just begs the question that they must put in a huge performance, not next weekend, but the weekend after, against Rangers, who will be champions. I doubt there'll be a guard of honour, though, Laura.
No, I think, first and foremost, they've avoided something that would have been quite terrible in terms of history. I think Celtic desperately have wanted to avoid letting Rangers stop the 10 at Celtic Park, because could you imagine the celebratory photos in their home? That is something that would have followed them forever, and it would have been a something that Rangers fans would have gloated about forever. So firstly, this result on Sunday is probably, from a Celtic perspective, in the long term, the best possible thing that could have happened for them. In terms of a guard of honour, no, I'm not expecting that at all. I did see that somebody was reminding everyone that Neil Lennon said that Rangers should have given Celtic a guard of honour when they won the league a couple of years back and then played Rangers immediately after. If that's the opinion of Celtic, then why not do it for Rangers? But no, in all seriousness, I do not think that's going to happen at all. It's a rivalry. I don't see any issue with it. I think people talk about respect and all that. See when we play England, we boo the national anthem, and you can argue all day about respect, but it's a rivalry at the end of the day, and this is your biggest rivals, and it's a competition. So I don't have an issue with that. In terms of the actual football, though, yes, they'll have a big point to prove. It's not going to do anything in the long run. It's not going to make any difference to their season. The points tally, the reputation they've had from this season that's came off of the back of everything. But for pride alone, they'll want to send a big message out.
To say, I don't boo the national anthem.
Oh. I
not everyone is not quite so xenophobic, Laura.
In terms of Dundee United, one of the reasons they held Celtic to a 0-0 draw, Benjamin Sigurdsson, who's been excellent this season, in my point of view. I just wonder if he'll be there next season, JJ, because he's just been so good.
Yeah, that's the reason they didn't score. Benjamin Sigurdsson was good in goal. Also, they are rubbish. They were not good. Missing loads of chances. They just look like a real beaten team, don't they, Celtic? Sigurdsson. I mean, Dundee United, any good team in the Premiership will struggle to keep hold of good players in the summer, especially because a lot of them will be short of money because they haven't had fans in all season long. So I don't think Dundee United will be any different. But yeah, he has been he's been one of the standouts this season, actually, if you're looking at. We did one of those like starting lineups from across the league as in best player of the year, but from one each, he'd probably be the Dundee United player who gets in.
Possibly. After a quick break, let's talk about a massive weekend at the bottom of the Premiership.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Saturday saw the meeting of Ross County and Kilmarnock, who JJ called the worst two teams in the division on last weekend's podcast. Spurred on by those words, the Staggies were 3-2 winners in a frantic match in Dingwall. Kilmarnock finished third in 2019 when Steve Clark, who's a very good manager, but now they're bottom of the table. They've been in this division for almost 30 years. Only Celtic, Aberdeen and Motherwell have been in the league longer than 28 years it is for Kilmarnock. And it would be an absolute disaster, Laura, for Kilmarnock to go down, but it's a real possibility.
It'd be an absolute disaster from a completely selfish point of view in a Motherwell hat here. I wouldn't be crying over it. Someone's got to take the flak, and right now Kelly are below Motherwell, so I'm sorry, but if that's the way it has to be, bye-bye.
Someone has to go down.
My heart will not be breaking if it's Kelly, because that means that it's probably most likely Motherwell have avoided it.
Oh, but yeah. It's so they've been up here for so long. Yeah. They are a Premiership team.
No, you're right. And they had the playoff final, obviously, was it 5 years ago now? Jesus, it feels like, I can't believe that's been 5 years against Falkirk.
Last week feels like 5 years ago, to be fair.
So they had that playoff final against Falkirk, and I think at the time everyone also agreed, look, Kelly are the Premiership team here. It would be very strange not to have them in the division. There are probably teams you would choose long before Kelly in terms of not being a Premiership side, if that's how you want to refer to them. But they've been struggling. They're there on, I know it's a weird way to say it, but they're there on merit. They haven't deserved to be high up the table because of results and performances. And surprisingly, Tommy Wright has struggled a wee bit since he's come in. I didn't think he would take this long to get started. 10 games without a win. I can't remember exactly how many of them are with Tommy Wright in charge, but when he did his first game against Motherwell, Motherwell didn't play well in that game, but won the game. So from a Motherwell perspective, great grinding out results against the odds when it didn't necessarily deserve them. But I said at that point that Tommy Wright, that was one game in, and he's already shown signs of a good performance and deserving wins. So he's going to find his feet and he's going to get the points. And they shouldn't worry. It's taken a bit of time though. That's been quite a few weeks now. And it must be a concern that they're still having these problems. When is it going to turn around for them?
Yeah, five of those games, Laura, have been under Tommy Wright, who said there was absolutely no positives at the weekend. And it always seemed like for Kilmarnock it was... Their issue this season was scoring goals. Kabamba's never been a top goal scorer. Eamon Brophy didn't really get much support this season and ended up leaving. But it now looks like defensively, JJ, when you look at Ross County's goals, they're pretty bad. You can't really say anything else. They're avoidable, but they're not avoidable when you're completely out of position.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this game is weird. Like, so Wright says there was no positives from this game. You can, if you even look at just the goals, you can probably see what he's talking about. Kilmarnock look like a team who are just desperate for the season to be over. Like, they cannot be arsed going through with it because it's the amount of energy they need to be able to play in this kind of defensive system and block everything and break it down. And the problem they have had has been the same for the whole season. They can't create or score goals unless Chris Burke does something. They don't create anything. You've gone through various players like Rory McKenzie, Greg Kilty sometimes pop up with something. They don't have the very basics of fighting around in the middle of the pitch, then they can't really justify hitting it long and looking for teams that there's just no control of the game. Looking for early long passes, but then they're not following up with real intent and desire to kind of follow up. And like you said, the goals were not great. Like, the XG of the game says it was basically a draw, but it doesn't really tell you much in this game because, like, Carl Lafferty was Kilmarnock's best player. He was the one that scored. Were Ross County good? I don't think they even were. I don't know. It's really worrying for Killy because this kind of, like, this could be, what is it Laura said about Mila? This could be quite terrible in terms of their history. And if they keep going like this, like, absolutely they'll go down, because at the moment Killy are probably the worst. Them and Ross County, I still think they're the two worst teams in the division at the moment. But at least Ross County play with a bit more kind of, I don't know, it's just to turn into like Graeme Souness for a minute, he just wanted it more. Do you know? It just seems a bit like that. And sometimes that's all you need in football. There's only so many tactical systems you can try. And Wright tried a few different shapes. It was basically a diamond the entire time, but he changed it from a back three to a back four later on. And he doesn't have much time to get it right, and he doesn't really have players who are either in form or look capable of getting out of it. It's difficult. It's difficult. They might be okay, but they also might not. I don't know. Let's move on.
the thing for me is that they're not picking up points against the teams that are in and around them. And you see Hamilton that pick up, you know, a filthy 0-0 draw, typically at Pittodrie. It's all full of 0-0s up there. But that's the thing. Like, Kilmarnock just aren't picking up any points. It's so bad that I feel like you look at the contrast of both managers at the weekend. Yogi Hughes, who kind of always, you know, asks for energy and talks positively about his team than maybe Tommy Wright is, who's maybe a bit dour and more looked at as a defensive-sided manager. And if he's a defensive-sided manager and Kilmarnock are shipping goals like that, I'd be utterly terrified about the run-in to the end of the season.
Well, yeah, if you don't offer a threat in the counter, you can't really defend like that because you just don't create anything. All you do is cancel every game and get nil-nils.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The big one coming up before the split, when obviously everyone plays the teams around them after the split, is actually next, not obviously not this weekend coming because of the weekend off, the following weekend, Motherwell are playing Kilmarnock. I think that's a huge one because I think, without making it mathematical, but a win for Motherwell would go a huge distance in terms of securing safety, whereas in the opposite hand, Kelly are really in trouble if a team that are so close to them in the table are taking points off them before the split. They're really, really in trouble because that's opened up such a gap.
Yeah, only one defeat in six for Hamilton as well. They're getting some serious momentum, something lacking for Kilmarnock. Up next, though, the race for the top six.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
Time now to hear first from our friends Paddy Power, courtesy of producer Charlie. Charlie, we do have a couple of Premiership games coming up this weekend.
Yep, Livingston host Hamilton at the Tony Macaroni. Martindale, the Messiah, has had a tough few weeks, but they can secure a top six finish if they avoid defeat on Saturday. Paddy Power make Livy favourites at 2-1 on, though. The draw, which Hamilton have done a lot recently, is 14-5. Also on Saturday, Ross County face Hibs. Yogi Hughes looking to win for the second time this season against his old club. But Paddy Power don't fancy his chances, with Jack Ross, must refer to him by his full name, favourite to dance out of Dingwall with 3 points at odds of 3-4.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only and T's and C's apply. And when the fun stop, Laura...
you stop.
Thank you. Let's talk about another goal fest. Motherwell 3-1 Livingston at Fir Park. I've given that really weirdly.
Motherwell 3-1 Livingston. I love that.
Motherwell 3 Livingston 1 at Fir Park. There you go. 7 goals in 12 games for Devante Cole, Laura. Where the hell has this came from? Graham Alexander's unlocked the key to Cole's Pandora box, which is full of goals.
Oh, it's all happening at the right time.
Yeah, what a it's performance good. Though, 2 goals and an assist.
What a performance from the team 2 games in a row now. I would arguably say they are the 2 best performances of the season. It's been good. It's good to see that kind of picking up some form of consistency after the 2 horrible defeats at Fir Park. I was going to say earlier in the month, last month now, to be able to turn it around and get 7 points out of 9 has been a good couple of weeks for Motherwell. Yeah, Devante Cole, brilliant. He's playing more through the middle as opposed to kind of wide of the three, and I think it's really helped him. He's grown in confidence. He's been involved in absolutely everything, whether it's putting the ball in the back of the net himself or setting up chances as well. So he's really hit some form. I think he's not the only one, though. We've seen Robbie Crawford, who initially came in as cover. He's really settled into that starting 11 and found some form as well to be such a key player. One of the best, actually. Standouts from last month over the kind of long, hard run we had. I think we're seeing the payoff of putting faith in Barry Maguire, who's never really had a run in the starting 11 before. He's kind of been in and out, come off the bench, never really been a mainstay in the starting lineup. I think we're seeing the rewards of that now as well. Jordan Roberts has, obviously, he's come in January. He's kind of finding his feet as well. I think he's one of, out of the starting 11, Graham Alexander's not changed starting 11 in the last few games. Out of the 11, he's the only one that he's signed, I think it is, since he came in. So that's really his player that he's been able to mould the way he wants. And I think another standout is Ricky Lamy as well. At the start of the season, he was playing as kind of cover at left back. It's not really his role. We've kind of seen him struggle there. But since he's moved into the central position, he's really come into himself as well. He's so reliable. There was times, more so in the Hibs game towards the end, when they were playing balls into the box. And it just felt like every time the ball went into the box, there's Ricky heading it away. Header, header, header. There we go. There's Ricky Lamy. So solid and reliable at the back. And that move into central defence has transformed him. So it's coming at a right time when everyone's sort of clicking and finding their feet. And I think a lot of that comes from confidence, from positivity, but also points reads points. So it's a kind of chicken and egg scenario. And as soon as you start getting points on the board, you will naturally gain more because of the confidence that comes with that.
It must feel more like relief, though, that these performances are coming at this stage in the season when... you know, a few months ago, you know, you thought Motherwell might have been in a relegation battle.
I mean, to be honest, still do think that. Not
yeah,
safe at all.
Yeah.
Definitely not out of it yet. I don't think we can let that mentality seep in, that we're just because two wins suddenly it's there's safety there. It's definitely clicking all at the right time. I think also a big part of that is Liam Kelly as well, in goals. See the difference you have when you've got strength between the sticks. To have your back line know that you can rely on somebody behind you that has that sort of stature. He's been pulling off fantastic saves, balls that he's seen at the very last second. He's been pulling off saves, and I don't want to sound like I'm only touting model players for Scotland, but in a realistic sense, he has got to be able to shout to be in the Scotland squad for the games later this month, even if it's just a third choice goalkeeper, just to be involved in that setup. I think he's, despite Motherwell being low on the table, he's been an outstanding candidate, and I think he'd really have earned his place if that's the case.
Well, Kelly's old team, Livingston, now five games without a win, four defeats in that time. Martindale was pretty livid in his post-match interview, saying that the defending was criminal. But you see, I just wonder if their season, you know, seems to be running out of steam after the League Cup final. It's obviously hard, JJ, to have a big disappointment like that. To then try and, well, they're still within a shout of the top six though, but it's been quite a big dip.
Well, I honestly thought this might happen when I watched the cup final. What I could see from Livingston is the kind of team that really needs to keep up this relentless momentum and intensity in order for that style of football to work. And if you don't have that, I mean, that's basically the football is like intense. So that's our identity. They come up to you and you know you're going to get a real hard game, really aggressive, not in terms of punching people, but in terms of the way they hunt the ball down and don't give you a second on the ball to get, like, you have possession. They launch it. When I say launch it, they play direct football. It's very vertical. That's what they want to do, get the ball forward as quickly as they can so it's in the opposition half. That means that they don't have to defend so much. So they're basically defending by attacking, but they don't have much control over the ball. And the way they control the game is by just hunting them down like those little tiny dinosaurs in Jurassic Park 2, you know, on the beach. Loads of them all running around. So like that, except big. This analogy has gone badly. So what I do mean is, I just let it run out of intensity. And it's the kind of thing you see. And it's like a... All teams that rely on that, it's kind of, once you get some sort of dunt in the side of the face and it knocks you off balance, it's very hard to get back on that. This analogy's all over the place. Back on that track that they were on. The train is wobbling all over the place, full of dinosaurs, and it's not going where they want it to get. Whereas I think St Johnston, the way that they played in that League Cup was more controlled and composed. And when everything's chaotic around them, they've got greater control of it. Sure enough, it means that they can be done in by a team like Livingston sometimes, who go in, you know, full intensity at them and you just can't really escape it. But you saw, I mean, St Johnston just beat Hibs 1-0 at the weekend, which puts them right on track to finish in the top six as well. And I think the way they're playing is, I don't know, their manager seems to be quite calm and maybe more encouraging, whereas Martindale demands high standards. Not to say one is better than the other, but yeah, certainly that seems to have worked well for them in the weekend.
Let's talk about the St Johnston game then, JJ. Like you say, they beat Hibs 1-0. I know. But a great strike from Liam Craig. I know he scored an absolute belter in the opening game of the season against Dundee United. But a great 7 days for Liam Craig, picking up his first trophy as a player. And then a good win for St Johnston, considering I think they didn't play too great in this game.
No, and I mean, again, the underlying stats say that Hibs were the better team, but maybe St Johnston are doing that thing that, like, McInnes once did at Aberdeen, where they have that, they get over the line somehow. They don't have to play particularly well, but they can beat you, even if their team has more chances. It's very difficult to work them out. Yeah,
it's hard to work them out, but I did see how deep St Johnston were. They seemed quite comfortable to just take the pressure on. Whereas Hibs, you know, they've struggled in the recent few weeks. And I look at someone like Kevin Nisbet, who gets his first start with the club after handing in a transfer request on deadline day. He's been on the bench for the previous five games. And, you know, he had a tough day, and funnily enough, I wonder if Liam Craig could have got sent off for that challenge when Nisbet was almost clean through. Probably not. I think he got the ball. Nisbet was so good in the earlier part of the season. Regardless of handing in a transfer request, It's not that he did that he's not been playing, right? I know you won't know, but...
I mean, I don't know.
Have Hibs shot themselves in the foot by not playing him? You know, he was the top goal scorer in the league for a good while. He was excellent.
Yeah, well, maybe like that old cliche of, you know, you want players who are desperate to play for the club because you'll get better performances out of them. Perhaps it's Ross just sort of planning for the future. If he puts in the team now, he knows what's going to happen next season because Nisbet will probably be away. Who knows why he's not been playing? Might be things behind the scenes, why he needed a rest or something like that.
Perhaps.
I don't quite know. However, Hibs, they just keep kind of controlling games but not finishing them off. And it happens to a lot of teams, I think, especially in Scottish football, where if you play that kind of football that I like, I've talked about this before, you keep the ball and you pass it and you try and open up teams that way. I mean, you'll create a certain amount of chances, and if you don't take them, you're going to end up just getting beaten by some stupid goal. And Craig's goal is not stupid because it's a lovely finish.
Yeah.
But he shouldn't have scored from there.
No. It should have been defended better, absolutely. Well, yeah, Hibs could finish third, probably will. St Johnston still within a chance of top six. Livingston could actually confirm being top six when they host Hamilton on Saturday. So still a lot to play for. But that's it from us. Thanks for listening. Thanks, JJ. Thanks, Laura, as well. And thanks for joining us, Finn. I'm sure he wasn't hungover. And to the Little Kicks for our awesome theme song. Cheers to Charlie for all his great work producing the hell out of us. But we'll be back next Tuesday. Have a great week. We'll speak to you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at thetotallyshow on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Scottish Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.